Good morning. This is Bishop Phoebe Rofe of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. Welcome to Faithfully Memphis. Every Thursday morning, we broadcast live from WYXR 91.7 FM from Crosstown Concourse in Memphis, Tennessee. And each week, we have the opportunity to speak with a guest about the role of faith in his or her life, and the important work that they are doing in the community. So we always start Faithfully Memphis with a saint of the day. And this week, on the Christian calendar, we are observing a really important day, the Feast of All Saints. As Christians, we do believe that when our mortal bodies die, our souls, our spirits, the essence of who we are as human beings, it does live on in the presence of God for all of eternity. And All Saints is a commemoration when we remember those persons who have gone on to their greater glory. Part of the chorus of angels and archangels, as we would say as Episcopalians in our Eucharistic prayer, to remember their impact on our lives and their continuing role in our lives, albeit in another form. This is a pretty old tradition. Tradition tells us that there was a theologian writing around the year 270 referring to the observance of a festival of martyrs. But we know that even before Christianity developed as a religion, in many cultures throughout the world, there were ways in which those who were still living remembered those who had died, those who had gone on. Because, of course, we understand that we are just one part of a much larger narrative that started before us and that will continue long after us. So in a sense, to continue to remember those who've gone on to their greater reward, not only is a source of strength and inspiration, but for me, kind of humbling to know that my time on earth in this form is limited and I too will pass on along with everybody else. So All Saints Day was this past Tuesday, but it's just an important reminder that we stand on some really strong shoulders and that those persons who have been an important part of our lives, they continue to intercede for us at the right hand of the Father. So the collect or prayer that is assigned for All Saints is as follows. Almighty God, you have knit together your elect in one communion and fellowship in the mystical body of your Son, Christ our Lord. Give us grace so to follow your blessed saints in all virtuous and godly living, that we may come to those ineffable joys that you have prepared for those who truly love you, through Jesus Christ our Lord, who with you and the Holy Spirit lives and reigns one God in glory everlasting. Amen. So this morning, we are very pleased to have as our studio guest, the Reverend Dr. Scott Morris. In fact, we are broadcasting from Church Health Space. Dr. Morris is the founder and CEO of Church Health, a faith-based healthcare center in Memphis, Tennessee, that offers care for those who were underserved by the U.S. health system. Dr. Morris has his bachelor's degree from the University of Virginia, his master in divinity's degree from Yale Divinity School, and his MD from Emory University, and so occupies a very unique role as both a physician and an ordained minister. So, Dr. Morris, good morning and welcome to Faithfully Memphis.
Glad to be here, Bishop. It's a true honor. Thank you.
So we normally start by asking our guests what the role of faith was in their life growing up. Did you grow up in a household of faith?
I did. I grew up in Atlanta, and my whole life growing up, when the door was opened, my family was there, really driven by my mother. So I grew up United Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
It was just what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a teenager, going to the youth group is what mattered. Even before then, on Sunday, I was the kid on the front row raising his hand to want to give the answer, whether it was about Paul or Jesus or Abraham. That was sort of who I was.
So probably not a surprise that you ended up going to seminary. Now, I often get the question, what was the transition from law to ordained ministry? But in your case, you went to seminary first and then after seminary went to medical school. So what was that transition for you?
So I've really never thought of it as a transition.
Mm-hmm.
The question for me as a teenager was, you know, I wanted to be professionally involved in the church, but what would that look like? Because, you know, when I was 15 years old, I knew I didn't want to preach 52 sermons a year.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how clergy do that.
Yeah.
It's just beyond me. But I read the Bible, and I realized that a third of the Bible has to do with healing the sick. It's literally on every page.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look around to see what churches did, and there just wasn't much to it. You know, we prayed for people. The pastor visited people in the hospital. You know, all over the country, we had built hospitals that have church names on them.
Mm-hmm.
They do good work, but they didn't seem to me to have much to do with worshiping congregations. So
mm-hmm.
I set out to figure out how do you actually create a healing ministry in today's world? What would that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And so it began a journey for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was either that or pitch for the Atlanta Braves. And to this day, I don't understand why they never called me.
And we are in playoff season. I guess we should say it's the season of the World Series. For those who don't follow baseball, or for those who are listening to this show, say a year from now.
Yeah, right.
And so we are now in this amazing building. I believe a former Sears distribution center that is Church Health and so much more. So for those in the listening audience who may not be familiar with what Church Health is and its purpose, can you share a little bit about that vision?
Yeah, because I finally did figure out what I wanted to do by going to seminary. I spent most of my time in seminary looking at what the church has historically done and came to realize there's a reason these hospitals have church names on them. We just mm-hmm. forgot.
Hmm.
And then one day I was in the chaplain's office at the Yale Medical School, and I looked on his desk, and there's a little pamphlet that said how to start a church-based health clinic. And I go, that's it. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So that the transition was I finally figured out, you know, what this was going to be for me professionally. So I went on to medical school, but I thought of myself, and still do, as a pastor who was acquiring a particular skill.
Hmm.
And then I end up coming to Memphis because I read somewhere, not making this up, that Memphis was the poorest major city in America.
Hmm.
And just based on that, I said, I'm going to Memphis to start my own church-based health center. So that happened when I was 33 years old. I came to Memphis not knowing a soul. I was 33 years old. I was too young, too dumb to realize that what I wanted to do had no chance to succeed. And so we began in 1987 with the same purpose we have now. We provide health care in the name of people of faith.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important because we're not a federally funded anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we care for the people who work to make our lives comfortable. They cook mm-hmm. our food, take care of our children, wash our dishes, cut our grass. We'll one day dig your grave. They don't complain. If when they get sick, their options are very few.
Mm-hmm.
So we started in 1987 in a small house. Saw 12 people the first day we were open. Over the last 35 years, we've grown to where we care for 80,000 people. We're the largest faith-based privately funded health center in America. And we grew into 13 buildings. Mm-hmm. It became very inefficient. And then on July 8th, 2011, a young art historian, Todd Richardson, came to talk to me about the idea that he and his artist friends had of turning the building we're in right now, Crosstown Concourse, into an artist colony. Now, this building was built in 1927. It is larger in square footage than the Empire State Building. It had been totally abandoned since 1992. And through what can only be God's grace, we ultimately find a way to raise, I don't know, $300 million and turn this abandoned building into what it is right now. And it shows you what's possible in God's imagination. Church Health's the anchor tenant here. We have 150,000 square feet.
And you provide all sorts of medical services, correct? It isn't just your annual physical.
Yeah, I mean, we're a real doctor's office. We can take care of any problem somebody can have from the cradle to the grave. So we have 20 providers on our staff. This is our job. When we finish here, I will go see patients for the rest of the morning. We run a family medicine residency, so we're training young doctors in the Church Health way. And then we have 1,000 physicians who volunteer with us. So I'm a family practitioner. You know, I have great limitations, but if the person needs to see the cardiologist, if they break their bone and need surgery, if they have cancer, we have the ability to care for that patient, and they're not going to get a bill. The hospitals donate their service as long as the physicians are donating their time. It really is a remarkable thing. But we also have dental care, eye care. We offer a food nutrition program. Here at Crosstown, it's 25,000 square feet of Church Health space, which is Church Health YMCA. You know, it's all shows you what's possible in God's imagination.
Wow, that's an amazing vision to go from an abandoned facility. For our listening audience, if you've never been to Crosstown Concourse and you're in the Memphis area, I strongly encourage you to come. It is an arts venue. There are wonderful shops, restaurants, all sorts of things. There's a high school here. There's a lot of energy in the building, really positive energy.
You just walk in and you feel the energy. But we describe it as a vertical urban village built around health, education, and the arts. There are 47 entities that have signed long-term leases to be in the building. There are 265 apartments. Every last one is rented. But it, you know, the artist group that really initiated the idea is now known as Crosstown Arts. They have music. They have you know, exhibition art. My favorite thing they have is called the Maker Space. Memphis loses a lot of young artists to New York because the artists literally can't afford to make their art. You know, you can join for $75 a month. You get access to 3D printers, digital filmmaking equipment, any type of blowtorch you would ever need. And then you mentioned the high school, but Teach for America is based here, something called Memphis Teacher Residency. So think Teach for America, only it's a Memphis-based program. There are 5 restaurants. There's a bar. There's a brewery. What more would you want?
There's something for everyone, right?
Right. Something for everyone.
So we are here. One of the purposes that we're here for is to talk about your new book, Care: How People of Faith Can Respond to Our Broken Health System. And let me just say that Dr. Morris has written a couple of other books as well. I was really struck by the stories in this book. And, you know, as Christians, we know that Jesus was the master storyteller, but in a long tradition of the rabbinic telling of stories. And I wonder, what do you think it is about stories that really can convey a point in ways that just the statistics or the numbers can't?
Well, I do think the stories are what grab people and help them feel connected, particularly to the work that we do. I think, you know, the church and people of faith use stories as a powerful way. However, I think we need the data to go along with it.
Got it.
One of the things that truly frustrates me about the church is we just think data is like not real and that it's only the stories.
Right.
But we need both because, you know, for us, I mean, there are many, many, many poor people in Memphis who have no health care. It matters that there are so many people who we are able to care for in the same way you would care for your mother. You know, it's not just a handful of folks. You know, for me, and what this book is about is showing how the faith community I consider to be a great sleeping giant to address the issues of healthcare in America in a system that is terribly broken. You know, poor people just nobody seemed to care about them. That's just how it is, particularly in Tennessee. You know, our a lot of people still think the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, if you will, has solved the problem. I assure you, the impact of the Affordable Care Act in Tennessee has effectively been almost nothing.
Is that because Tennessee was one of the states that did not participate in the sort of optional portion of that?
Yeah, so...
did not accept we did the not, federal
we,
DUNS.
We not expand Medicaid.
Right, right.
So people think that being poor allows you to get Medicaid. No, to get Medicaid, you have to meet a categorical criteria. You have to be blind, disabled, over 65, or single mother with small children. So anybody listening, if you are not one of those things and you need health care because your job doesn't offer it to you, if you're not one of those things, you're not getting Medicaid. It is not going to happen. On the other end of this, you know, I think everybody thinks when you turn 65,
you've got all this free health care.
Yeah, you get Medicare, right?
Right.
Yeah, well, wrong. You only get Medicare if somebody, an employer, has paid into Social Security for you for 40 quarters.
Yes.
So if you have a housekeeper and you pay her in cash and you don't pay Social Security for her, even though she may have worked for you for 30 years, when she turns 65, she will not qualify for Medicare. She's going to have to pay out of her pocket for the rest of her life. I think most people are shocked when they hear
right.
that. But welcome to America.
Right. Wow. Wow. So would you mind sharing just any story in this book that you think really not only captures the work of church health, but gives the listeners a sense of what, and I think it's so important to emphasize, the folks who come to Church Health, they're all working. Many right. of them are working way more than 40 hours a week, but still don't have access to health care.
Well, I mean, there are many, many stories in this book, and it's not just stories of Church Health.
Right.
I mean, it is about clinics all over the country that are doing this work. Many of them, Church Health has spawned, but it's... you know, from California to New York, from Texas. But, you know, one story in the book that a patient of mine that I still find very moving is he's 50 years old. He comes to our urgent care clinic, walk-in, if you will. I see him. He works in concrete. Pray you never have to work in concrete. It is a very hard job. But he's complaining about his knee hurting. So I x-ray his knee, and anybody would look at that x-ray and go, that ain't right. So it turns out he needs his knee replaced, no question about it. It's the only way to relieve him of his pain. Well, I tell him, you know, we have the ability to do this. We have an orthopedic surgeon who will donate his time to do the surgery. We also have anesthesia, radiology, pathology, all donating their time. The hospital will do this without a bill. And then the other thing I'm missing is the piece of metal that we're going to put in there. Smith and Nephew's going to donate that. I tell him, we can take away your pain. Let's just schedule it. And then he asked me, will I have to miss work? Yes, you're going to miss work. We're replacing your knee. You're going to miss work. And then he says to me these words, I don't know. For now, the duct tape works just fine. In my opinion, in America, No one should have to use duct tape in order just to go to work. So we come up with a plan. He sees our physical therapist. Through that summer where he can keep working in concrete, we replace his knee in the winter. When you don't do concrete, right. physical therapy gets him ready for that next spring to get back to work.
Mm.
You know, this is oftentimes what people refer to as church health magic.
Mm.
But it's not actually magic. It is a reflection of what can happen when people are willing to come together to take care of our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's who we're talking about. They're not just this, you know, amorphous group of people out there. Mm-hmm. You know, the people we take care of and everybody in the clinics that I write about are taking care of the people who make our lives better.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we not want to do that, especially as people of faith?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how have members of the faith community been involved over the evolution of church health? And not just Christians, but people of any faith tradition. Is church health sort of working with faith leaders for any kind of services or support?
Well, you're a good example. I mean, how long were you in Memphis before I called you?
Not very long.
But I mean, one of my best stories reflect this. So when I first came to Memphis in 1987, I came not knowing a soul. Mm-hmm. I was totally selling out of an empty cart. You know, I was too young, too dumb to realize that what I wanted to do had no chance to succeed. So at this point, to start something called Church Health that's mm-hmm. going to have a cross in its logo, it's going to be led by a Methodist minister, me. I went to the most obvious place for funding. A Jewish Family Foundation.
Mm.
So it actually was the Plow Foundation that gave the first dollars to support church health. I tell that story because it's a reflection of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul says we see through a glass darkly. You know, what I think that means is that none of us have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
We need each other. Diversity in all its forms is a good thing. So Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu are all involved in the work of church health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are not a federally funded anything.
Right.
The government cannot do the work of the church,
mm-hmm.
and neither should we ask it to.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of your congregations are federally funded?
Zero.
It's absurd to even ask that question, right?
Right.
So the work of church health is not to solve the great social problems in America.
Mm-hmm.
We actually don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what our mission is about is ask the question, what does it look like in today's world to have a healing ministry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to follow Jesus, you're expected to do three things: to preach, to teach, and to heal. We do not get to take a pass on the healing part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to follow Jesus, you got to figure out how you are engaged in the healing ministry.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not doing that, you're ignoring a third of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So that is true for individuals, but it's also true for our congregations.
Right.
You know, I think the pandemic has reminded us in a powerful way that caring for our bodies is very important to what it means to follow God.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we still struggle to know how to do that.
Yeah. Well, I have to say thank you to you, because one of the ways that I really got to know many faith leaders of all religious traditions came during the pandemic, when you convened a group of pastors, priests, bishops, rabbis, imam, everyone, to figure out what is a coordinated, comprehensive message to be delivered to people of faith, so that we could be sort of based in science and fact to keep people safe. And that was a great introduction to me of all of these folks. And I felt it was very successful. What are your thoughts as you reflect back to the early days of the pandemic in 2020?
Well, I have a chapter in the book about that very mm-hmm. thing, and I completely agree. I think in Memphis, the faith community stood up and we held arms
mm-hmm.
and we did this actually quite well. I mean, back in March of mm-hmm. 2020, you know, the issue of, are we going to still have church on Sunday morning, or is the synagogue going to meet on Friday, and the same for if you're Muslim. I mean,
right.
There's a lot of implications to that, not the least of which financial.
Mm-hmm.
And so that coming together and for us to universally say, this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not everybody, but most people followed the lead of,
yes.
of this group that we created. And it wasn't just we stopped having services, but we then led in the understanding that this is actually a moral question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the issue of the pandemic was not just about getting sick from a virus. I think it very much reflected what is morally right, and we need leadership coming from the faith community to create a community that understands this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were able to set aside our theological differences.
Yes.
For which those differences are real and many. But we came together to say, this is what it means to be a community, and especially a community of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so there is a chapter mm-hmm. in there about how this all unfolded. And I'm willing to sit back and say, we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think it was not only a way to strengthen the relationships among the individuals who participated, but also to almost be a leader in some senses. And it's good to see the church out in front and doing some things and being on the right side.
But,
you know?
But the problem is we need to move forward. You know,
correct.
We can't go back to where we were. And
right.
you know, one of the things I think we have to really think long and hard about is like, okay, every church out there is struggling with people coming back.
Yes.
How do you pay your bills? How do you pay for this building?
Yes.
You know, I think this has actually given us a time to rethink church.
Mm-hmm.
What does it actually mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it can't just be about we're going to have more podcasts or more
right.
Streaming. I personally believe the work of Church Health is church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being engaged with us in the type of work we do or other entities that are out caring for people the way I think God has called us to care for is what church needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's just how it ought to be. We are not going to grow our churches through more bad Christian rock music.
Mm.
The way we grow the church is by doing what we are called to do. And this issue of caring for our bodies as well as our spirits is one of the most important ways that we can be faithful to God. And when that happens, people will want to be a part of the mm-hmm. community that we create.
Mm. So that's a great segue. So if either an individual or a congregational leader is listening to this conversation and thinking, wow, what are some of the ways that I can get involved or my congregation could get involved with Church Health? What sorts of opportunities would they have?
Well, look, there are many ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always a financial issue. I mean, we
right.
have to raise $25 million a year to keep our doors open. But we've come to understand health is not about the absence of disease.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization would agree with that. You know, we think health is ultimately about three things.
Mm-hmm.
Having more joy in your life, having more love in your life, and being driven closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it takes to be healthy.
Joy,
love,
and God. Yeah.
Which means that if that's not happening, what is the point?
Mm.
Now, what is the practical implications of that? So we created something we call the Model for Healthy Living.
Mm-hmm.
We argue there are seven things in life that are equally important to life that must be in balance if you're going to be healthy. So medical care is one, but it's only one.
Mm-hmm.
Our country is currently spending $1 trillion a year on the doctor, the hospital, and drugs. But it only has 10% to do with your health outcomes. 10%.
Mm.
I think you could argue we're not spending the money very wisely.
Mm-hmm.
The other six things are nutrition. I'm going to come back and talk about that. Movement. Our bodies were made to move. Emotions. Family and friends. Work. We define work as those things that bring meaning to your life and your faith life.
Mm-hmm.
Your faith life is actually as important as anything the doctor would do if you want to be healthy.
Hmm.
But to your question about what can any leader of the church or
right.
any church be involved, I mean, let's just start with the nutrition component.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our country has struggled mightily with issues of nutrition.
Yes.
You know, obesity is an overwhelming issue. And yet, the least healthy meal you could eat every week is at our church.
On Sunday. Yeah.
Our churches have blessed the sin of gluttony for the sake of fellowship. In the midst of the obesity epidemic in America, clergy are actually 20% heavier than the rest of the population. Mm-hmm. So to start with, you can't have a healthy congregation if you don't have healthy leaders. Mm-hmm. It is amazing what happens to congregational meals if the pastor starts saying, I'm not eating that stuff.
Right.
You know, let's have a at least healthy option.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to say we're never going to eat fried chicken, mm-hmm. but there needs to be healthy options, and it needs to be led by the clergy, mm-hmm. period, in the conversation, mm-hmm. you know. And then same thing will be true about movement. Our bodies were made to move. All of these things that we call the model for healthy living, mm-hmm. You don't have to be a doctor to do this. Mm-hmm. But every last one of them lend themselves to the very thing the church ought to be really good at.
Yeah.
And it will grow your church. This is ultimately about evangelism.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think people want to demonstrate their love and their concern for clergy and leaders by sort of putting out the best spread, probably as they have been trained and brought up in their own households, not realizing that. You're right. So much of that stuff is not healthy for us. But it's done out of love. We just have to figure out a way to perhaps redirect it.
Well, so here at Crosstown at Church Health in our nutrition center, we actually will teach congregations how to actually have a healthier church night meal. We're not going to make you serve tofu.
Right.
I don't like tofu either. But, you know, there is a way to actually have healthier meals, both for congregations and for individuals. Mm-hmm. And again, just addressing the issues of clergy, clergy need to lead the way with all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, here at Church Health, we can help you do that.
Great.
Give us a call. Look for our website, churchhealth.org.
There we go. Churchhealth.org. So I'm imagining that in the time that you've been in Memphis from the 80s to now, you probably have seen changes, transformations of some things. Any reflections on kind of where you see Memphis today and where Memphis may be moving in the future, given your time here?
So from the time I came to Memphis, you know, we just live in this world of trying to tell the whole world that Memphis is a terrible place. Mm. And yet, from my observation, that's just not true. Mm-hmm. The beauty of Memphis in so many ways is, yes, we have a lot of problems, but almost like any community I know, mm-hmm. if you care about Memphis, Memphis will care about you. Mm. If you want to go to Atlanta or even Nashville these days or LA or New York and you want to do good, good luck, because nobody's going to give a flip. You know, you want to do good in Memphis, then bring it on.
Yep.
You know, you will have people be able to come together with you to make a difference. You know, I don't know where we are right now, but, you know, prior to the pandemic, Memphis was the number one city in America that millennials were moving to. Partly because it's cheaper here, but I think it's also because people saw that here's an opportunity where I can make a difference.
Yes.
And that is where it's changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know, you probably never were here back in the 80s to see downtown, but my Lord, the difference between downtown now and how it was in the 80s, it's just an amazing transformation. Mm-hmm. And despite the terrible things that from violence that have happened in Memphis in the last few months, this is not a Memphis thing. This is an America thing. Mm-hmm. You know, every city I go to has the same horrible experiences that we have had here. Mm-hmm. And to just talk about how terrible Memphis is, it's just not right. You know, yes, America has got some horrendous issues we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But I think Memphis is a city that can actually help solve those issues.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, because one of the things that attracted me to this particular call of this in this diocese was exactly that Memphis is large enough that we have diversity, we have culture and arts and music, there's industry, and yet it's small enough that one person can cold call civic leaders, religious leaders, and get a return call and really be part of a conversation about moving Memphis forward.
Well, and the other piece about this that we just, I think, have to endlessly embrace, you know, I'm, you know, endlessly on my friends at the Daily Memphian to get this. Memphis is a religious city.
Mm.
That, like no other city out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to embrace that, and we need to find a way for the power of our faith communities to rise up to make our city strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the issues around how we work together in a pandemic, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many other ways that our faith community should be leading the way. That's where I think we can improve a lot on. But mm-hmm. the opportunity is there with a bullet beside it.
Yeah, yeah. So as you think about the future, not only of church health, but of this region, what is it that gives you a sense of hope about what the future holds for us?
I mean, there are very few days go by that I don't see people who inspire me.
Mm-hmm.
We have a program at Church Health we've had for almost 30 years now. We call it Church Health Scholars.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 15 kids at any one time, finish college, mostly want to go to medical school, but not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But they work for us for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go on to do amazing things. Mm-hmm. Or like tonight, literally tonight here at Crosstown, we for the last 10 years, in partnership with the University of Tennessee, have a course called Serving the Underserved. Mm-hmm. So these are medical students, dental students, nursing,
pharmacy,
mm-hmm. whatever. So we have to cut off the registration for this class at 75 after about an hour of letting it be open. Now, these kids don't get any credit. They get a certificate from Church Health that's worth nothing. But they come to this class because they are driven by what we're about, serving the underserved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the young folks in my life who give me such hope. And having grown up in the segregated South and seeing things in one way, these young folks, their whole perspective of life is different about race, about sexuality, about identity, all of it. And they're the ones I think are going to maybe pull those of us with gray in our hair forward, whether we want it or not.
Well, I think we need both, though.
I think
I don't want to be held accountable for everything I thought when I was 25 years
right.
old. You know, even then I, you know, probably thought I knew exactly what I needed to do. But, you know, I think we need to come up with a way where we are working hand in glove together.
Yes.
And again, I just think the church needs to be open to how this works with younger people in leadership roles. We can't just push them to the side.
Yeah.
Just like I think, you know, and as a Methodist, I mean, you know, the Methodist Church getting ready to split over the issues. It's already happening here.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What's happening the last week with churches in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we need to find a way for young, dynamic clergy to be given leadership roles mm-hmm. earlier on.
Yeah.
You know, as a bishop, I know you struggle with this very thing because there aren't any jobs. But
right.
sometimes we just have to come up with a better plan.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Dr. Morris, thank you so much, not only for this conversation, but your energy, your hopefulness, everything that you've brought to the community. Again, it's churchhealth.org. If you're interested in learning more about the work of Church Health, and I believe we can get this book, your newest book, anywhere books are sold. Is that correct?
I believe so, yeah.
All right.
Certainly in Memphis at Novel and Berks, but Amazon, wherever else you would get a book. So.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate the opportunity.
So just wanted to let you know that next week on this show, the Reverend Dr. Noah Campbell will be in conversation with Peter Abel, who is the president and CEO of the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. We are in the midst of a series about the arts and faith. And so I think that will be a wonderful conversation from two men who are very engaged in the arts, and also two community-related events to bring to your attention. The Diocese of West Tennessee is preparing for our annual Diocesan Convention. This is the 40th anniversary of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. Now, of course, there have been Episcopalians in West Tennessee for far longer than 40 years, beginning actually in the 1800s. But in 1982, the diocese, which had been comprised of the entire state of Tennessee, was divided into thirds, with West Tennessee headquartered here in Memphis, Middle Tennessee headquartered in Nashville, and East Tennessee headquartered in Knoxville. And so as part of our celebration of our 40th anniversary, we are having a worship service on Saturday, November the 19th at 9 a.m. at Church of the Holy Communion, one of the churches in our diocese located on Walnut Grove. Bishop Don Johnson, who was my predecessor, and who served as the bishop of the diocese for 18 years. He will be leading the liturgy that day, and I will be preaching. So anyone is welcome to come to that service at 9 a.m., and there will be a nursery for small children. Another event that is happening is that we're going to have our second annual Advent Arts Market on Saturday, December the 10th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Barth House on the University of Memphis campus. As a liturgical denomination, the season of Advent is the first season of our Christian calendar, and Advent is the month or so period leading up to Christmas. And so this will be a wonderful opportunity. There'll be many vendors, including student vendors, selling arts and crafts. There will be music. There will be live music during the day. We will also be broadcasting a special edition of Faithfully Memphis Live from Barth House that Saturday morning. So if you are looking for any sort of holiday presents, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, we encourage you to come out again to Barth House on Patterson, on the University of Memphis campus on Saturday, December the 10th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thanks again for listening to Faithfully Memphis. Just a reminder that wherever you hear podcasts, including Spotify and Apple Music, you can listen to the show, but also we encourage you to subscribe, to like us, and to give us any comments or feedback about the programming that we're doing and thoughts for the future. So until next Thursday, stay safe and stay positive.